Podcasting is a complicated profession, which is why we're here to discuss The Acolyte, currently airing on Disney Plus. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined, as always, by the rest of our coven. I don't know.
Yeah, we're a coven.
We're a coven now.
There we go. Tony Sindelar is here. Hi, Tony.
I like this. I feel like this is going to be open up a lot of tax opportunities for us. Thanks for having me.
You should wait to hear about these space accountants. Kat Benish is also here. Hi, Kat.
Witches! I have questions.
Okay.
Yeah.
We are here to discuss episode 3 of season 1 of The Acolyte, entitled Destiny, an episode in which it's the flashback episode, and we learn what happened on that planet. Lo, those many years ago, where Mei and Osha thought each other were dead, and the Jedi did something questionable?
Unknown.
Yeah. The big mystery of the show that surely they wouldn't reveal until episode 8.
Did they?
Yeah, there's a lot of questions.
I'm being a jerk. Yeah, which, guess what? Strap in, because it's late and I'm feisty. So.
Yeah, we had a recalcitrant. Is that the word?
Recalcitrant.
Recalcitrant child.
Or intransigent.
So. I mean, in your child's defense, I could just try and be a better person. Mm. But I won't.
No. No, it's 8:45 on a Saturday night. It's fine.
Woo!
Woo!
Kat, you want to do the recap?
Yeah, so I potentially complained about the length of our recaps, and so the solution has been for me to do the recaps. Unlike Dan and Tony, I will not, at least I don't know how Tony does it, unlike Dan, I'm not going to do it with Wikipedia prompt. So, smash cut to a pine-covered forest, but then also definitely filmed in Scotland.
You're off to a great start.
I like how you complained about the length. Yes, I'm derailing your recap.
The first two
shots.
But
you're going to do it shot by shot. Fight.
Okay. So let's see if I can do this from memory and very little prompting. We basically, there are two girls, Mei and Osha. That is their nicknames. They are part of what appears to be a coven. A witch coven, potentially ties to Dathomir. We're not really sure. There's some interesting conversation.
I think they literally call it a coven.
They do. They say coven.
And they say witches.
Yeah, they say coven. Yeah. That doesn't appear to be. Is. Yeah.
We learn them first when they're in the forest. That is a totally normal pine forest, except for like one random gold tree. We learn that they are not allowed to be outside of like the medieval fortress town ever. And then over the course of the story, we learn that this all happens on one day. They're supposed to ascend today or go through ascension.
It's like a witch bar mitzvah. Bat mitzvah? Bat mitzvah.
Yeah, totally. Totally is what it is. The
Ravanagula
is lit. And over the course of the episode, the Jedi... there's an ascent. This is the linear... Linear thought is so challenging for me sometimes. Everything's going to crumble. This is going to go bad. Everything's fine. There's so much pressure. I can't handle it. No. So anyways, there's the Ascension. And we learn that Mei is super gung-ho about the Ascension. And we learn that Osha is decidedly not gung-ho about the Ascension and kind of wants to be a Jedi. Interesting that she knows about Jedi. And over the course of the day, we basically learned that her mother, or basically both mothers, are the leaders of this coven. And the Jedi are somewhere on the planet, and during the Ascension, Mei ascends and gets her cool tattoo in her forehead. The Jedi interrupt, and they expose the fact that there are children there, which is a big taboo. We'll probably talk about that. They, the following day, test the children. Mei purposely fails. Osha tries to fail, but is really bad at lying, and Osha is tested, and then Osha's clearly going to go join the Jedi. Osha goes to her mom and says she really wants to join the Jedi. Can she join? They decide to have a coven meeting about it. Mei is angry. Mei then takes some... Why Osha is packing up her bag to leave. Mei takes basically a candle, burns Osha's book of drawings, where she's been drawing essentially the emblem... Mm-hmm. Is that the right word there?
Yeah.
Of
logo,
the Jedi.
Something. That's cool. Sigil.
Sure,
I don't know.
Sigil. Yeah. Motto.
Icon.
Not motto.
Could be a motto.
I would have words.
It may have words.
Heraldry.
Okay. Heraldry. There we go. That's what I want. And while what seems like a small fire, again, really unclear how it's a small fire in a giant rock fortress, I have questions. Osha tries to escape, runs into Mei. They both fall into a giant pit, but our friends...
Saul.
Saul saves Osha at the last minute, but May looks like she tumbles to her death. And on the way out, we see Osha and May's mother also dead. And there's a lot of dead bodies all in one place. And there's a lot of things on fire. And clearly something else happened here, and we don't really know. And then Osha leaves with the rest of the Jedi. At the very end, we cut to May is alive and back at the yellow tree. And that's my interpretation of what we just saw.
Okay. Yeah. I will say the.
Thank you for not interrupting me.
Yeah, it goes a lot faster when people don't get interrupted.
We interrupted a couple times. Yeah, we interrupted a couple times right at the beginning. And then, you know.
So the
tree, and then now again.
The tree, I think, is significant because it's where the poison from last episode is derived from. And there's a. She mentions at one point that they hunt with the poison in the winter as opposed to with bows and arrows in the summer. No.
Mm-hmm. They're fancy Star Wars bows and arrows. Fancy Star Wars bows and arrows that have
not as fancy as Omega's, but fancy.
They still we didn't like see the, yeah. buttons on them.
Yeah,
they had normal arrows though too. So, yeah, I commented to Kat part of the way through when we paused when the Jedi showed up, and they're like, "You have children here, and the law is you don't get to steal children. That's our thing."
Yeah, yeah. They literally say the Jedi don't steal children. The Jedi can steal little children as a treat. They steal some children. Yeah.
They borrow them.
I definitely think they're...
And never return them.
Like a friend with an overdue library book.
One storyline they haven't really leaned into here, but maybe they're going to go down this path of like... And I think maybe next we talk about like what is going on this planet. Of the fact that like the Jedi steal thousands of children. And again... I think it's been very clear in this podcast, if anyone tried that with our son, I would, not okay, right?
Once again, a complicated profession will need to come out, and 2/3 of us will state that we were opposed to child theft. Yes.
Yeah, we are anti-child napping. I think it's called kidnapping. But that is atrocious, thinking about...
You know who else is opposed to child napping? Your child who hates naps
really does not.
Also opposed to child napping.
I was going
to
say what I thought was an interesting.
I think I was just saying it's like how much did that lead to the downfall of the Republic? Sorry, Dan.
No, it's fine. You finished that. I thought it was interesting to hear Saul present what I think is his sincere opinion about it, even if it is kind of like you can make the argument for a certain degree of like brainwashing. But he at least
has the party line, right?
Right, which is that he felt isolated and alone because he was different from everybody else.
We don't steal children; we liberate them from their loving parents.
Yeah, yeah. I think it is always interesting. Just bear with me a moment because I think back to the original trilogy, in which the only hint that this is an issue is when Luke goes to Yoda and Yoda's like, "Oh, he's too old to start the training." And he's supposed to be like, 18. At that point, like, I think he's like 21 or so. And it's not until we move back to the prequels that we get an idea of the fact that it's really children being trained, including when Anakin is even said to be too old.
Like some very child soldier vibes here.
Yeah. And it's something that I don't think the prequels ever really grapple with is like, it's just sort of taken as read, like, oh. The children go off to learn to be, monks or whatever. Yeah. And, like, I can't tell that the prequels ever really had any interest in engaging with that or were just sort of stating it as a function of world building at that point.
Yeah.
And it is interesting to watch shows then subsequently potentially deal with this as a issue.
Does George Lucas have children?
Yes, several.
He has a bunch of, I believe, possibly adopted children, but
at least some of them, and several of them are in Star Wars movies.
Okay. Yeah, they appear like in Phantom Menace and stuff in the background. So this is I thought this episode was great, really interesting and fun, and did lots of interesting things with Star Wars, which brings me to Tony's new theory about Star Wars media in our world where there is. Infinite Star Wars media. That so far, I feel like there are basically two types of Star Wars that we are seeing again and again. There is the slightly more rare, and I feel like it's almost like it has to be like the third generation of Star Wars creators who are creating this new, very special Star Wars that I am very excited to see, which is Star Wars that has things to say about Star Wars.
Yes.
Postmodernist sort of Star Wars.
Yes. Postmodernist Star Wars, if you will. And I think The Acolyte is that. I think Andor is that. I'm not sure if anything else is that in a completely pure uncut way, so much as maybe it has little stripes of it in it. Yeah. And then there's the other Star Wars. And, you know, I think I'm going to put a lot of this on J.J. Abrams, but people who just want to make more Star Wars is the second main type of Star Wars. Is you like Star Wars? I got more Star Wars for you. I love Star Wars too. I saw it as a kid, and now I want to make movies that have Star Wars in it or TV shows.
I think you could throw Last Jedi onto the list of Star Wars stuff that has stuff to say about Star Wars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I felt that
Force Awakens has
Force Awakens is literally just a riff on the original Star Wars.
And elements, I say, the later seasons of Rebels, right?
Yeah.
But no, I agree.
Some bits of Clone Wars too. There is a
slight third type of Star Wars in my theory that's getting more and more fractured and complicated, which is the Dave Filoni, I can fix Star Wars.
Yeah, like, I can make it better.
I can make it better. I got some duct tape. Let me bridge some stuff. I can spackle over that plot hole.
There are three types of Star Wars.
Well, I think that's like the Obi-Wan show is good and different, but it's still kind of the same cloth. But if people are like, yeah, cool, this seems like a great universe, I'm going to use your costume designer, but then I'm going to do nothing else with the rest of you. You guys have planet names I have to use? That's fine. Okay.
And I don't know. Nothing about Obi-Wan stuck with me, so you can tell me I'm wrong, but did Obi-Wan have anything to say or do about Star Wars except give you more Star Wars?
I thought the Inquisitor storyline was really interesting.
Okay.
And what they did with Leia was nice. I thought, it was mostly Star Wars, but it was like, I think it was the best of your first category.
Yeah.
I think it was its first category, its best. I think Boba Fett's probably your first category, it's the worst. Ahsoka was just boring. And I'll give you, this episode has turned me from like, I wonder what the Acolyte's going to be like. Oh, this is interesting. We have witches and they're outlawed. What's going on? And they're not allowed to have kids. And like the lady, like, so it's basically
they
public
worship the
like,
force, but they have their own name for it and they have their own rituals.
Well, basically makes me wonder, like, do the Jedi, and again, one of the reasons that if this story is like looking at all the threads, let's use that word, of the downfall of the Republic, of like, is what going on here basically is the Jedi only allow the Jedi to use the force. And basically means that all these other interpretations, and so interesting comparing this to what we had seen in the animated show with the Sith just before this, Tales of the Sith, perhaps?
Tales of the Empire.
And the fact we saw the Force nuns on Dathomir, and again, like, all these different flavors of use of it, which is just so interesting that the Republic is tamping this down.
It does. I thought it was probably significant that is she the leader of the coven, or at least a high-ranking member of the coven, is a what's the name?
Zabrak.
Yeah, there's at least two of them in Darth there.
Now, and this one looked kind of different than the animated
ones. Different
horns,
skin colors, and they have horns. I mean, Maul is a Zabrak.
But do the other Dathomir witches, are they not all Zabrak? Okay,
no,
not everyone.
They're not.
Not all Dathomirians are Zabraks.
Yes,
okay.
That's correct. There's multiple species, I think, it says, that live on Dathomir.
Gotcha.
I will say one of the interesting things that this made me think about was sort of, and I'm kind of now curious to see, there is this movie hanging on the horizon by James Mangold, who directed Logan and Ford versus Ferrari and The Last Indiana Jones, about the founding of the Jedi Order, which made me more interested in that, because at some point you feel like, I can see why thousands of years in the past, they're like, there are too many people running around with these powers that don't know how to use them and are getting people in trouble and are hurting people or whatever. Like, we need to institute a system where we test people so that they are trained to use these powers responsibly. But then you see how over millennia that gets calcified and potentially brittle and corrupted because everybody feels the need to adhere to it. Because I can understand why at some point in the distant past, they felt like it was necessary to, like, we have to test all the children because we can't have people learning these things left and right. But it also then becomes a matter of control, intense control.
I feel like you're actually giving commentary on organized religion, dear.
Yeah, basically.
I'm not doing it. The show's doing it.
But no, this is why it's, I think, so interesting.
Were there people in religion running around with superpowers? Just to check.
Yeah.
It depends on... Anyways, we're not going to talk about that one. But I do think I also... I really appreciate, considering Star Wars does only recently have a history of having women at the forefront, which I do appreciate, of, I think, explicitly calling this out. It's the Republic trying to shut down, specifically the really leaning to the gender angle was, I think, really appreciated and nice to highlight. Rather than, like, they didn't have to do that, but that was really nice.
I mean, a lot of great stuff happens in this episode, and there's a lot of great, interesting visuals. But for me, the kind of particular key scene is the interrupted ceremony, where you have this like collision of the two cultures, and the Jedi, I guess Saul does almost all the talking, right?
Yeah.
Basically saying this is what the Jedi believe about themselves, right? And they're not all Dathomirian, but the coven basically being like, but what about, you know, we're not in the Republic. You guys are just rogue space cops showing up here. Why are there four Jedi Knights? Well, or three Jedi Knights and a Padawan, like, showing up here to, like, we heard rumors that there might be two children.
Yeah, well, right? It is. There's a few things that are interesting there. One, there are no other children on this planet, which is a relevant factor.
Let's come back to that in a second.
Yeah. Two, I love the bit. There's sort of an aside, I think, at one point. I don't remember when it is, but one of them's like, we can't let our, like, the crazy monks take our child, someone says. And
no,
I missed that. Yeah, but I think it's interesting in the structure of the episode, because the way it's plotted out, we spend the episode, the first 15, 20 minutes, almost entirely from the point of view of our witches. Mm-hmm. So we are sympathetic to them.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so when the Jedi show up, we are, because of the structure of the plot, on side with the witches. I think there is some, it's interesting because they're trying to present them, I think, both sides as a little more nuanced in terms of how the individuals play into it.
Yes, yes.
Because there is some stuff in there where it's like, you know, what the witches are doing, like, yes, it's their beliefs and whatever, but like they also, you know, there are elements of what they're doing that sometimes seem a little weird, and just like, is it out of protectionism, or is there something else going on? Do they have another agenda? And I think we kind of see them as like, okay, they're clearly not evil, but like they're also hiding and doing some stuff that feels
because they're being persecuted.
Yeah, that is certainly a big part of it. But it's because again, I think it's gray. It's kind of gray in terms of when we see the individuals, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, it does seem like they are rather intentionally displayed as being kind of like harmless, right? Like, there's nothing there. It's never like, and here's where we keep our human slaves,
right?
Or here are the animals we abuse. Here we are, like, oh yeah, out back, we're strip mining the planet.
Thought they were gonna throw them down that pit for a second.
But they did.
They do live in a spooky castle.
The Padawan, though, when they take over the Padawan, I think that's the best sign of like, oh, you guys are very, very powerful, and I can understand why you were perceived as a threat. Also, very interesting to see this Padawan, and I think building on that point, Dan, of just how much of this is from different people's perspective, and how, like, I was a little worried when we started with the flashback episode of like, oh man, really? We're just gonna do like the big reveal, and there's gonna be no tension. And I really actually thought they did a really nice job with this, and because now the big question is, what happens when Ocean is in that tunnel, right?
Yeah. And who knows what?
Yeah,
and
right.
Who sees
possibly?
What?
Yeah. And who? I mean, you know, I think they've kind of played fair in terms of, we saw stuff that didn't make sense, right? And will make sense later, right? I mean, so first off, is the fire going through the whole temple actually the result of May, like, setting a book on fire?
The reactor or whatever it is explodes at one point.
The reactor is exploding. Yeah. And then, and like, the most, perhaps the biggest one, it's like, they run through a room of dead bodies. And it's not like, those dead bodies are not under, like, burnt timbers or, like,
they're not,
you know.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming we will see stuff. I want to know, like, who knows what, like, does Saul know what's going
my
on?
My hunch is Saul does. My hunch is basically the other three all teamed up. Or at the very least, Carrie Ann Moss and the Padawan decided they were afraid that,
because that Padawan has done something, that he's taken a vow of silence and then
commit suicide.
Later decides to kill himself.
I think they're afraid the children won't be released, and they think they're doing the right thing, and they go in and they kill them all to get the children. I think Saul has no idea what's going on.
I can imagine that like some kind of conversation that got out of hand, because they super established that the Mother Coral is like
militant.
little hot-headed. little hot-headed, and you know, you could see something getting out of control there.
Yeah,
but also the Jedi are clearly like invading their house.
I think that's a reason why Saul is the only one to show up. I think he may have suspicions. Mm. Like, that's why is he there, right? Like, yeah. Why is he running through looking for it? He has...
Well, he could have been told, like, go get the children, and he's never told, like, what happens back there.
Or he could figure out that maybe they were planning something, and he decides of his own volition to go after the kids. Yeah. Like, he has a bond, I feel like, with OSHA. And that's, again, to go back to the sort of complimentary part of the thing I was just saying with the Howard present the two sides. Like, the Jedi don't come out looking good, but, like, then you have Saul, who seems like he's fairly genuinely like a nice guy and like actually does care about them. And like he has his own upbringing that he is sympathetic to like how they're feeling. And like the Jedi, again, as an order, may be problematic and may be calcifying and falling into corruption. Mm-hmm. But it also doesn't mean there aren't individuals within it who still believe in like...
We spoke about that last week, too, about how he like channeled that, like not necessarily the letter, but he's definitely the spirit of what it means to be a Jedi.
Yeah.
But then you get your kind of classic The Wire thing in terms of what does Saul's participation in the Jedi Order compromise him? What does he do when he sees other Jedi Knights or Jedi Masters doing stuff that he himself would
not
do?
What did he know and when did he know it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we talk about go ahead.
I was going to say, I love a lot of things about this episode. I love the kind of parallel that we see that basically, like... You know, it's almost like a call forward, backward, something like that. It makes that scene in the tunnel where Saul is there and OSHA falls now has a different resonance to like, this actually happened before. You, the viewer, don't know that, but the characters are living that, right?
No, that was really nice. I thought the same thing, Tony, exactly that.
Also,
I also love that it's like, we have a whole Star Wars has the very classic serial media thing of like, if someone falls down a pit, they're not dead.
Yeah, gotta see a body.
Yeah, and guess what? That's the whole, like, that's the crux of our show. Someone fell down a pit 16 years ago, and guess what? They're not dead.
They should
that's
have that established about. Somewhere. Like, look for a body. Like, when they was like, well, we thought we saw, well, we didn't see a body, you know. Yeah. What did you, sorry, you wanted to say something before.
No, do we ever see Han Solo's body when he dies?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, he gets stabbed and then falls down a pit.
So, but we never see the body.
But people never get better.
He showed up again
as a ghost.
Yeah.
Ghost, vision, something.
Can we talk about the Immaculate Conception, the Anakin Skywalker 2?
As you can imagine, the worst segment of Star Wars fandom is mad about this because they want only Anakin Skywalker.
But it's such a stupid idea to get upset about, right? Like this is even I could tell when I saw this in theaters, like, what?
Yeah. I mean
those are these Star Wars Catholics, as it were.
Whoa.
We just lost our viewership.
You know,
listenership.
Those people are going to get mad about lots of things. I mean, they were probably... I mean, were they still watching after it was revealed that there are lesbians in Star Wars? Unclear. The Immaculate Conception, would that be not silly even if it didn't feel like heavy-handed religious the heaviest of handed religious symbolism in A Phantom Menace? I don't know. But
there's
something
about the fact that, like, you know, you would assume that only one person ever came up with this. Once somebody figures out how to do it. It's out there, man.
But they also there's a little bit of there's like one line of dialogue.
Yeah.
We don't really know what happened, right? All we know is the Jedi aren't gonna like it.
And we know but I do appreciate, like, unlike the Phantom Menace, there is at least some reason given, like, that she Anasaya, is that how you say it?
Anasaya
did something, right? There was some sort of thing that she did that Shmi?
We don't know.
Anakin's mother? Is it Shmi?
Yeah.
Such a bad name. It sounds like Smee. What Shmi did. Which is just she with an M. What Shmi did. Still so bitter. At least there's some, to your point, some reason, something that happened there.
Yeah, that is never in I don't know if that's ever explained in canon.
It's not.
Yeah,
there's heavy fan theories.
There's
about
heavy
it,
fan
as,
theories
as you can though. As you would imagine.
Is the fan theory is the Force?
It's Palpatine, right?
Yeah, Palpatine's the big fan theory.
Yeah,
yeah,
that he basically orchestrated all of it, which doesn't really make sense because then that person killed him. So it's a bad plan.
I don't want Palpatine anywhere more in any storylines. I don't think
I keep returning.
I mean, it's
somehow he returned.
Somehow the Emperor got someone pregnant. I think it's the even more people in Star Wars need to be biologically related to each other. You know, it's like, look, DNA, it's a long time ago. They don't have it super figured out yet. There's only so much DNA.
Anakin was created by Palpatine, and Rey is Palpatine's granddaughter. Does that mean Anakin?
I don't care.
All right. So one thing I want to talk about this cousins. That's related to this. Is Mei and Osha as these sort of contrasting?
Can we also talk about how good the actresses were? They were so good.
Yeah, I thought they
I
were
was
great.
Really impressed. For
I thought everybody here was actually really good.
I also really appreciate them not using basically one kid to play and then do basically the cutting and having them talking to, basically duplication. Like they
that
chose...
feels like that would be really hard for a child actor.
It would
to do.
And, I mean, what's her name? Did it in Lindsay Lohan in The Sandlot, or not The Sandlot, The Parent Trap? She did it really well, from my memory.
Praise for Lindsay Lohan. Says
Wait, can't none for Haley Mills? This is Haley Mills' erasure. I will not stand for it.
Oh, no. Yeah. Well, she also did it?
She was in the original Parent Trap.
I've seen that one, too. She also did a really good job. She did a really good job. And then the Olsen's just one twin.
Patty Duke? We want to go back to Patty Duke? Identical cousin?
Did you just establish a conspiracy theory that the Olsen twins are not actually twins? Is that what you're saying?
one of them moving really fast back and forth.
John Oliver one. So anyways, I'm glad that they chose instead had two kids. So, but I totally derailed you.
Yeah, well I thought it was interesting to portray the contrasting personalities, right? Like, they're intended to be sort of identical twins, but they are very different in terms of personality, which is a fascinating, fun, like, exploration, right? And in some ways, I wonder how much of those differences in personality ties into whatever was done to create them. Like, whether or not it's like, oh, do we take... Like, because
they
have
said there's like
chant.
A yin yang kind of thing.
Too. Exactly. The beginning where they say there's no me without you and you without me or whatever. And is it almost as though it was like one soul split down the middle?
That's interesting. Maybe it is
because
one person.
I thought the interesting and most potentially extreme part of this was when Osha, at the very end, when Osha goes to leave and Mei is like, I will kill you. Like, and you, like, you buy it. Like, she will kill her.
Yeah.
And that is a dark thing
child.
For like an 8-year old to say mean.
Yes.
Yeah. No, it is. It's upsetting and, I feel like it also, it is well acted by that child.
Several times she has some great faces.
Like I felt, it's tricky here because we're kind of having Mei's villain origin story here. And it's hard to have a villain origin story that starts at 8. But like, you are a twin and your twin is like, I don't want to live with you anymore. I'm going to go be a Jedi. I like all of this, everything that you I'm leaving.
And it's not even
I reject your entire world.
I don't want to share everything with you. So it's not even like, I have this thing. It's like, I am reacting to you. But I think two things to that actress especially. And Dan pointed this out, when Osha walks off the ship and Mei walks up to her, and Mei's face when she just realizes that Osha did not pretend just spectacular. And then again, the fact that she delivered the line, I will kill you, and you as a watcher totally believe her, is like, that's really hard.
But what I liked about that was it really gave some more color and texture to the last episode when Osha sees her again for the first time. They do have that last moment where they're on the bridges that are collapsing, where there's some genuine fear and genuine like, still my sister, I still love them kind of thing. But like, on the heels of getting the idea that Mei really killed the entire family and was ready to kill her, it strikes me as much more understandable that this is that she has such conflicted feelings about seeing this long lost sister.
Which brings me back to who told Osha what when, because Osha believes that Mei killed her entire family, right?
Yes.
And wasn't Saul said that, right?
Saul says that,
but also,
so
though,
it's not just that Osha believes it, Saul believes it.
Yes. On the when they're on the bridge splitting, Osha even asks Mei, Osha, I think I said, I'm about to go back, and like, what have you done?
Yeah,
right, and like very much thinking, and then I think Mei says, Mama's dead, and Osha, like, clearly is putting it all together that's on May's fault. But if you guys noticed, Mei also asks, Osha, what did you do?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So Mei is also confused about what happened, but I again think leads theory of like there is another actor out there, presumably the Jedi.
Yeah. Or the Sith. We still have that Sith floating around, too.
That is an interesting piece we had not thought of yet.
But I mean, I feel like I'm, you know, again, it leads to what does Saul know? Because, like, Saul, I mean, we do see Saul thinks May is dead, right? Because there was some, like, no, May is dead. It's like, oh, May is back. So, and you know, he saw her fall down a pit. That's, you know, you're allowed to think someone's dead when they fall down a pit. That's in
it's a legal doctrine.
Yeah, that's established legal
doctrine.
Your Honor,
my client clearly thought that this person fell down a pit.
It was not a ball pit. It was one of those really deep, bottomless pits.
Sustained.
And so,
there was a Wilhelm scream, you know.
I'm covered. I filed the paperwork. But also, Saul, I mean, OSHA believes that May killed everyone, right?
Yes.
And so somebody told...
But I think OSHA believes that from the very first moment that she's out there. I think OSHA comes to that conclusion herself. And I think she might tell Saul that's what happened. So I wonder if Saul did not tell that to OSHA. I think OSHA may have created that conclusion and gave it to Saul.
But yeah, that feels like...
And then like the three other Jedi are like, oh, we don't know what happened. This is so
that's
weird.
The thing.
There has to be another episode or another extended flashback where we see what happened from Saul's perspective or from May's perspective.
Yeah.
And like, maybe May did some horrible Dark Jedi thing and there was lightning going all over, or maybe not.
Yeah, I think the question there too, from Saul's perspective, is when we saw last week's episode where you know, they start to put together that they're going after these specific Jedi, Saul, like, you know, OSHA tells Saul, like, they're going after the four Jedi who were there. And Saul is not like, oh, it's because of the murder that we did.
Yeah,
the murder. Yeah. Remember that murder we did?
That's
16 years back?
Yeah. So like,
knew that was going to come back and get me. Yeah,
he's a little bit in the dark, right?
Like, but the other two clearly did know something.
Oh, and Dara definitely. She recognizes May because she sees the tattoo.
Yeah,
and Torben,
and she says, "I'm sorry."
And Torben drinks poison.
Yeah. Torben drinks poison.
Yeah,
he did some stuff, I can say politely.
And now, I mean, which I think raises the real interesting question of the Wookiee Kalmaka.
Yes.
What's your deal?
Yeah.
Right.
What do you know?
And I have to say, I think I was like, why do they have the scene with Kalmaka in the last episode? You're just going to show us him in the next episode. It's like, you know what? It's okay because you did not show us in this episode. I retract my criticism.
We only get two scenes, brief scenes with it. Well, he realizes the girls are there.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
OSHA goes to talk to him when he's fixing the speeder.
Yeah. Yep.
And then he has like a, you know, he says something to her after the test, right? And I also wondered about that too, because he's clearly, I think we're intended to believe, like, mechanically inclined. And we know OSHA has gone on to be and she uses her tool at the end there. So there's some relationship there.
Also, I mean, you know, to the whole Jedi stealing children to indoctrinate into their order, OSHA is a child that, I mean, effectively rescued/stolen and does not end up being a Jedi Knight.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So the Jedi steal thousands of children and not even all of them get to be Jedi.
Well,
if I say two things there, one thing I think is like, I there was no discussion of her being too old. Mm-hmm. I think it was the issue is not her age, but the grief. That was the issue that fundamentally changed, like that.
Too attached.
Too attached. Well, I think. And then the second thing I was just gonna say, Dan, is you derailed me.
Sorry,
no,
I'm so sorry.
No. But going back to our first comment of, I am interested when you leave the Jedi Order. We saw Ahsoka do this too. For the Jedi being so, I guess, like a very
cool.
No, totally cool, man. But so controlling over who can and cannot use the Force. I guess they're okay with kids leaving the Jedi because they've gone through basic training, so then they're like, know enough not to be stupid, if that makes sense. Like, maybe that's why, like, you don't have to take an oath, like, I'm never gonna use the Force again. I don't know.
Or do you live in a horrible surveillance state where, like, we heard there was a murder on some planet and we showed up at your place of work the next day to shake you down.
I'm developing my own theory about I'm curious about OSHA's reasons for leaving, because we heard very vague terms about it. But part of me wonders if part of it is like your twin, who may be somehow connected to you, is actually still alive and in some senses is acting almost as like an anchor for you dragging you down and keeping you back in some way. I don't know. I think that's going to be part of it.
Vision dream sequence thing when she crashed. So
yeah.
I mean, and you could imagine that grief would be a thing that would probably make you kind of susceptible to dark side.
Well,
thinking.
And if it's
you, like,
more...
you are literally like tethered to a twin, you may never be able to give up that grief.
Right. And if you're great, exactly. You don't even know why. That may
By
be
space
why.
Magic.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. That may be why she was never able to pass, like, get through her grief, work through her grief, because technically, she, like, part of her knew subconsciously that May was still alive.
Yeah. I, have you guys ever seen the movie Nell?
No.
Okay, no. It's a great movie. It's from the early 90s. It's wildly inappropriate for me to have watched as a child. But it's basically, I think it's a young Jodie Foster, I want to say.
Well, in the 90s, not that young, but yes.
Might have been Jodie Foster. It's a, Dan's going to Google it right now. Anyways, it's
Holly Hunter.
It might. It's about a young girl who I think is written off as being schizophrenic or something, where she has been isolated from society. And I think people just write her off as not being able to communicate, not being able to listen. I forget what exactly it is. It's been a long time to see it. And essentially what happens is it's like some psychologists come in and eventually break through and realize that Nell is mourning the fact that her sister is dead. Spoilers for Nell, a movie that's 30 years old. I think, what, 1990 is when it came out?
1994.
Yeah, really should not have seen that when it came out when I was like...
Wow, Nick Searcy.
It's a good movie. It is actually a very good movie. I remember crying. But essentially, it's the, like, she had to see her sister grieving, or see her the dead bones of her sister, to like be able to finally move on and I think sort of enter society. And it's I have no idea how it holds up. Don't consider this a recommendation. I enjoyed it at the time. But I think something about the two sisters very is interesting too. Is like, I still come back to the fact that Osha sees this idea of two become one, right? And I like, and now we're going like deep Jedi. Force stuff.
We going
that
all the way to
happen.
Dyad.
Yeah. The idea, or the triad.
That's a different thing.
No, the father, the son, and the daughter.
Oh, different one. I meant like the sequel trilogy does the dyad thing with Kylo Ren. And
I'm looking forward
Rey.
To the.
We're just gonna ignore that.
Petrad. Anyways. but the idea that it's two things that's interesting, that Osha in some ways seems more complete than May. One, Osha saw the ghost of May. May didn't. And then also, they're very similar, but Osha has the artistic side and she sketches and draws, but May doesn't. And I think there's a part of me that, like, May seems much not as nuanced as Osha.
She's more, I don't want to say zealous, but also more single-minded.
Yeah.
She's into the witch thing, right? I love that scene where they're asked to, you know, take the oath or whatever, and she's like, yep, I'm in. And they go to Osha, and she's like, I guess. Yeah. Like, not what you want to hear after making a lifetime commitment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, it's interesting.
I wonder if we will get any insight into how May spent the last 16 years. I suspect they weren't great.
No.
Yeah.
The other thing that's interesting is I do wonder if the show is going to end up with how is Dathomir founded?
Mm.
Yeah.
We don't know where the Dathomir witches are. We just know they're witches.
Right. We don't know if these are precursors to the Night Sisters or whether they're a different sect or whatever. Mm-hmm. But like,
Even completely unrelated.
Yeah. The idea that it's like, well, these people have been around forever in one form and another, right? There have been other Force users doing this for as long as the Force has been a thing. But like, essentially, the like sort of hegemonic style of the Jedi has wiped them all out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Dark, man. Interesting stuff.
Is calling the Force the thread? Is that?
I don't think that's been come up
before.
At
least not in things I'm familiar with. So that's a new thing.
No, the Night Sisters, I think, still refer to it as the Force, although it manifests differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't know. I feel like I was still kind of like, I don't know about these first two episodes. And then the third episode, it's like, okay, I'm in now. You're doing Star Wars stuff that is different than other Star Wars stuff and is weird and has an interesting story to tell in the Star Wars universe. So, Good job, episode three.
Yeah, to me, this was a solid A+. I loved this episode. I was very engaged, very excited. Had no idea where it was going to go. Really enjoyed it.
I am fascinated. I really want to call out also Jodie Turner Smith, who plays Mother Anasea.
She was so
good. She was really good. Oh. I've seen her once in like a crime show with Carla Gugino and Giancarlo Esposito, another Star Wars veteran now. And she was kind of playing a side role in that. She was really good. But this is, I thought she just really. I loved her scene with Osha where she tells her, like,
basically,
we'll talk. I'll talk, but I will take this into account. And she's, I feel like she's gonna let her do it. Is the thing right? Like that's yes. the sense you get. You don't know.
Well, and that kind of makes me think that it's also possible that the what's the woman who actually carried the children? What's her name again?
Coral.
Coral. You get some sort of antagonism there too. And there's also a world where essentially this is the coven turning on themselves too.
Yeah. Could be.
To keep the girls.
All of the stuff with the coven is kind of interesting. I mean, it's sad because I don't know if we'll get to see those characters ever again, or at least not in any length. But you do have all of these complicated things where it's like, they have multiple people who are their mother, basically. But different kind of dynamics with them and different witches who feel about the children different ways. I like there was they kind of have their emergency meeting, and there's the one really elderly yeah. witch who like they all kind of defer to briefly. It was a side of Star Wars we don't see very much. So yeah,
I also think it's interesting as well to note that this episode, which is directed by someone who's also directing episode 7 of the series, Koganada, who is
I know him from working on Pachinko, which if you haven't seen Pachinko,
he's a Korean, yeah. South and Korean born American filmmaker.
I mean, Pachinko is a really great Apple TV show that's all about basically like the effects of things on one generation to the next and generational trauma and how things play out across. I think it's over 100 years from
different generations.
A South Korean family that immigrates to Japan and beyond. I saw that and I was like, okay, that makes sense in terms of like the themes that this show is playing with.
It's also a good book.
Yeah.
Book plug. Cool. All right. Any other bold thoughts about this planet that was definitely Scotland?
Also a little... Kat, you're probably more familiar with this than Tony, but are you familiar with Masada?
Spell it.
Masada. It's a city in Israel, ancient, like sort of Judaic Israel, where there is a fortress on top of a mountain, and essentially they are besieged late on the siege by Romans, and basically everybody and who's left commits suicide.
Yes.
It is a classic story, but I could not help but think of it when I saw the mountain fortress and then with all the dead witches at the end. Like, it really evoked that sort of thing to me. And, like, that has there is some resonance there with the idea of the holdouts being surrounded by the Romans, a giant hegemonic force that are basically there to assimilate or kill everybody. So to me, I think there's something interesting there.
I think you could actually unpack the Romans. I think are generally were fairly good than the vampires. Like there was only one. Anyways, we could talk about that in this essay. I will defend. But yes. Yeah. Yes. No. I'd forgotten about that story. But yeah.
Anyway, it has a kind of a vibe that reminds me of this like fortress at the end there.
Interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, shall we do some listener mail?
Listener mail.
Hey, listener mail.
As a reminder, if you'd like to send us some mail, well, you can do that in one of two ways. You can send a message to acp@theincarnival.com with your trusty old email client, or you can hit us up on Mastodon, where we are @acp@zeppelin.flights. I've had several messages that I have not read because we watched this very late this week.
Well, so we'll start Dan with some stuff. Dan is going to do this live.
Well, some of the stuff we did talk about from last week. So from listener Brian. Brian writes, subject line, back to tanks equals bad healthcare.
Yeah.
In episode 83, you discussed the use of back to tanks and the poor healthcare provided to people in the Star Wars universe. I am unable to recall any women who received back to care except your character, if you selected them to be a woman, in the Knights of the Old Republic game by BioWare. Sadly, when talking about women who have to die in Star Wars shows and movies to serve the plot, connects to how many countries handle healthcare for women in our real world and hits too close to a hard topic.
I totally agree. I think, do they put Boba's lady friend?
Fennec Shand.
Did Fennec Shand get thrown in the back at one point?
She has robot parts. Yeah.
That's true. So wait, I think what's actually happened
here
is...
doesn't he take her to a chop shop at one point?
So exactly. Yeah. Okay. So it's very possible. So I think women were not required to be part of medical studies until the 90s. I think what possibly happened in this galactic universe is they never tested back on women, and it's not allowed for women. That's my headcanon there.
In the Star Wars universe, until very recently, women were considered a kind of droid. It's awful. It's but it's, you know, it's
we're going to get canceled very soon, Tony.
By who?
Droids. I thought we were discussing whether or not Bacta exists, because in that scene with Osha at the end there, she's got a breathing mask on.
No Bacta.
Yeah, but maybe Bacta's not good for that. Maybe you don't want to like ingest it.
Also, literally, Luke is in a Bacta tank.
Yeah, but he's wearing a mask.
He's wearing a mask.
Do they not have masks?
I don't know what that point is. Brian adds, P.S. On a lighter note, I have a special edition copy of Star Wars Monopoly for when the special versions were released to film in the 1990s.
I have that too!
With pewter pieces and the Star Wars script that you can translate using the provided key on the currency.
Yes, I have that. Actually, it's still in my house in New Hampshire, guys, if you guys want to play it. My parents can bring it down.
Moving on.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love Monopoly.
Listener Billow writes with the subject line, non-ambulatory droids. I'll just point to the 2009 Motorola droid name license from Lucasfilm. Checkmate, Tony. Love, Billow.
Wow.
Your move, Tony. Your move.
Once again, ousted by licensing.
Now on to...
Cerveza, Krista.
A couple of the messages I hadn't read because they were about this episode. Jay writes in with episode 3 thoughts. I'm sure you'll discuss these points on the podcast before you get to the mailbag, so feel free to edit any or all of this. You don't have to retread the same ground. Anyway,
you assume we edit.
I had some thoughts after episode 3. I appreciate they took a whole episode to show the flashback. Sometimes when shows eke out the flashbacks over several episodes, it gets tiresome because it breaks the flow in the present day story, and you never fully get into the flashback story until that part, the final part. That said, is there another side to the story still to come? Torben apologized to May, saying they thought they were doing the right thing. Did he just mean when they said they need to test the kids for force sensitivity, or did they do something else?
Torben also has, I don't know if you remember, he has like a very dramatic facial scar and a beard.
He also has a terrible beard. We didn't address that last week.
Oh, I forgot.
That's a really bad beard.
It's a trauma-induced beard. but he has, like, a giant, like, red scar, like, you know, across his forehead.
Also a bad,
super dramatic,
kind of receding hairline, almost. Like,
look, he's meditating. He doesn't eat. He doesn't drink. He doesn't do self-care. Yeah, he's got bad hair. but yes.
Did May really kill all the witches, or was she helped by the other Jedi? Next, I like they've established Anakin isn't the first Immaculate Conception in the Star Wars universe. Always felt a bit too on the nose for me, episode 1, so I appreciate they've confirmed there's a precedent. But I asked the question, what kind of skullduggery was Shmi up to before she ended up on Tatooine? We addressed many of these points, Jay.
It's also possible that just like sexual health was not covered among, you know, the oppressed on Tatooine.
Yeah. Would not surprise me there's zero sex ed.
And then there are the implications for the prophecy. The one, was that just wistful thinking? Because when there are twins, the force is imbalanced because one tends the light and the other towards the dark. Mm. And the problem with Anakin is he didn't have a two, and so was always going to be in conflict. He probably, like... So that got really dark in my head. It was going to be about in the womb how there was another
Dan.
Twin.
Oh, no, Dan.
If you count all the Anakin's clones, then...
A comment on last week's podcast, you mentioned the prison bus ship and how weird it was. I liked it, though, because we see the same thing in The Mandalorian, the awesome episode with Bill Burr and Richard Ayoade, which also had like a prison bus ship with only a single human on it.
Ship.
They have one.
Is
Matt,
it only
it's Matt
one?
Lanter.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Poor right, Matt Lanter gets shot.
That was a better... That was a obviously prison, prison technology has evolved a lot in 100 years. You know?
And again, I like the way this suggests perhaps the New Republic have learned from the mistakes of the High Republic and decide to put at least one person in the cockpit of the ship. Not that it solves the problem. Anyway, contrary to all the trolls posting on social media, I'm enjoying the show. Looking forward to where it goes in the second half of the season. And then finally, we have a message from Tristan. Tristan writes, hello again, ACP. I've been watching The Acolyte. I thought I'd bring up an issue I've seen happening more and more in modern media. It seems that writers, directors really want very particular scenes/lines to happen in their works, regardless of the logic/geography not making sense. Dan pointed out a good example of this when the group is being guided through the temple to see Torben, but Osha breaks off and arrives first. Another example is when someone breaks into a Jedi temple, warranting other Jedi to come investigate. No one thinks it might be a good idea to close the giant hole in the roof, or at least guard it. Many others, but I won't bore you. Generally, things like this aren't show-breaking, but they do make me question the competency of the writers' directors. It's like spending a ton of money designing and building a beautiful house, but forgetting to add doors or windows. If you're spending this much money, it should be functional. I know it's not the best analogy, but I think you get the point. Also, the ceremony scene felt like a high school theater kid interpretive dance. Is no one going to make the observation the droid pilot seats on the prison ship are the Star Wars equivalent of Otto from Airplane? I was also surprised to see some railing on a walkway, since Star Wars is known for its OSHA violations. Yes, I hate myself as much as you do for that joke. Anyway, keep up the excellent podcasting. And yeah, I still listen to Biff. P.S. Since you seem to like the model of Boba Fett, which you previously sent us, here are some pics of a model I recently finished, but it's not Star Wars related. It's a tank.
Is it?
A Sherman tank.
Oh.
Maybe.
Wow. Dan, you can identify tanks?
No, he wrote, it's a Sherman tank.
Oh, okay. I was like, I would not know different types of tanks from one. From
it's a World
Dan's
War II
really
tank.
Into tanks, actually. Everyone really? Should know that
Secret,
Dan
secretly
loves tanks.
Tank, great. Tank fandom.
I've gotten...
Everyone send Dan some
now.
Tanks
yeah.
for his
yeah.
birthday.
Please
yeah.
don't.
Yeah. Father's Day tomorrow, we're going to have a tank cake.
Yeah, tank-themed Father's Day. Nice.
Yeah, he's going to wear tanks. We're all wearing tanks. Great.
Tank top?
Yep. T-tanks.
All right. A couple comments from our Mastodon account. One from, it's either Jan or Jan. I don't know which one. I'm sorry. Writes, great to have you back. Was looking forward to your thoughts on The Acolyte. How do you all feel about the extreme review bombing on the series? I think we all think it's sucky. I don't like review bombing anywhere. Like
yeah, I didn't even know it shouldn't be a thing.
I didn't even know there was review bombing until like Tony. Like I am clearly not that online.
Don't read the reviews.
I just have a life offline.
Zing. Speaking of losing listeners,
must be nice.
No, I had no idea, and I think that I agree. Review bombing is always awful.
It's
and
bad.
Again,
it's toxic.
Again,
yeah,
and I think it also disproportionately impacts both women and people of color. So like, it's extra bad.
Yeah, I mean,
it's probably not even. I don't understand it. No. Like, it just seems like.
Why bother?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Like Goodreads. I don't like the book, I just don't leave a review.
Yeah. It basically feels so like, it's like, I also don't want to just go out and just throw trash into the street. And I just assume that these are the same people who do those things, but they talk to each other. It's like, I throw trash into the street and I want to coordinate my trash throwing. Yeah. With
more
other
like trash
people,
I mean, more trash.
If I think
trash
of something is doing like active harm, like like I will negatively speak about Game of Thrones. Like I think there were some like very bad things about the first two seasons.
Would you like to make that your identity, that you do not care for Game of Thrones? Would you like to join an organization of people mad about Game of Thrones?
I will still talk for hours about how much I hated that last season. Let's talk
about
it right
but
now.
But you have not. But the difference is you can do that. You have not like
let it go.
You don't, you're not. Yeah, you're not wearing a t-shirt that says "Ask me about the last episode of Game of Thrones."
No. That's what my burner accounts are for.
Oh, okay, good. All right,
not on main, please.
Cat Prime, not online.
Yeah,
Cat stealth burner accounts.
Yeah,
two online.
I
get that.
way to get that happy medium. As always,
I get that Star Wars is important to lots of people, but I can't help but go back to, I find it very funny now. To go back and see one of my favorite TV shows, Spaced, which deals with this, with the prequels. And like how essentially, so Bilbo, the character of Bilbo, played by Bill Bailey, basically tells our main character, like, rethink it when you're sort of defending these things with the like with your life, these like franchises with your life. Maybe you should like rethink your approach to that kind of thing. And 20 years later, that show is 20 years old. 20 years later, we're having the same conversation.
It's just entertainment. No. Let it go. If you don't like it, don't spend your money on it. It's fine.
And, obviously, we care a great deal about Star Wars. Otherwise, we should probably not be doing this podcast. And presumably, people listening to this are overly invested, significantly invested in Star Wars. You have an unbalanced portfolio in your brain, is what I'm saying. And there's nothing wrong with that, but maybe, making your whole life about hating something, I don't think we're speaking to anyone who's shocked by these words.
Yeah.
We don't get, not only do we not approve of it, I don't think we even get it, right? What's wrong with you? Knock it
so
off.
Much energy and time also.
You could be writing your own fanfic.
Yeah.
Yeah, go write some fanfic.
Anyway,
everyone would be happier.
We think it's a waste of time and not good and doesn't reflect the true experience of the show. And we all like this Acolyte show. It's a thing.
All right. A few things from somebody on the account called The Sane. I think The Acolyte faces an impossible challenge in terms of plot. 100 years seems a very short time in the past for the following to be true. One, after thousands of years, the Jedi undergo a rapid decline. Two, the Sith have been extinct for a million years, according to Phantom Menace. 3, the Jedi Council from Phantom Menace is untroubled by a dark side Force user, at least one of whom was a Jedi Master during the Acolyte. Maybe the amount of the decline is misread on my part, but I don't see how they reconcile these points. I think this trying to tell this story at any time overlapping Yoda's time in the Order is going to make things difficult. I've seen other people talk about this as well. I guess my question would be, like, where were we 100 years ago? 1924. Yeah. A lot has happened since 1924.
Yeah.
In terms of the decline of the Order after millions of years.
We're seeing that the Order's already declined.
Right. I guess my argument to that would be, it kind of makes me think of the old, I think it's a Hemingway quote about how you go bankrupt.
Just gradually, and then very suddenly, all at once.
Yeah. Like, I kind of think that's what happens.
He was speaking both economically and morally. So, I mean,
I could look back over the decline of things over the last decade and see, like, a lot has happened. So I guess I don't care enough about people who are worried about there's not enough time.
Is there a podcast, I think, we just don't care? Yeah.
Well, I think it gets tricky when you try and pin things down to specific years. I mean, and I think we struggle with it, right? You know, it's like you're watching Rebels and you're like, where is Luke right now? I want to know where Luke is right now. And it's like, well, he's 14. He's collecting moisture. It's not important. And then it's tricky when you have a character who is hundreds of years old, like Yoda. And you're like, well, where is Yoda when this is? And it's similar to the Marvel Cinematic Universe problem where it's like, why aren't the Avengers here? Like, this seems real bad. And, you know,
maybe
I will
call
say,
them.
I'm,
yeah.
Well, Hello. It's like, I'm reading a lot of DC comics, and right now I'm reading a lot of Batman, and there's a lot of times when, like, Batman should call the Justice League. Like, a lot of really bad things are happening at Gotham, but you have to believe that he's super stubborn, because it's like, you should have called them 45 minutes ago. Like, I get it.
To this point, Tony, you
have lost control.
He's a billionaire who dresses like a bat to fight crime. The decision making is not a high point.
I think it is true. I do kind of almost wish that it was like
centuries
this is
ago.
This is an indeterminate time, and the Wikipedia has a thing where it's like things are pegged to Battle of Yavin as your before and after event.
Even Lucasfilm uses that now.
Yeah,
I mean, it seems like there's clearly basically some continuity challenges between the prequels and the original trilogy, where it's like, guess what? George Lucas didn't have this all mapped out. He didn't have a binder with, like, a timeline, and it's like, here's when Anakin was born, and here's when Luke and Leia were born.
Opposite. Stuff changed. Like, you can look at his original notes and stuff. Like,
because he doesn't think like that, and that's fine. Right? He's made some movies.
Thinks within the scope of the movies, yeah.
You know what, George Lucas? I know you're listening, and I just wanted to know, I think you're doing okay for yourself.
I agree with what you're saying, and I think fundamentally, too, like, going back to the Roman Empire example, right? Like, I think, in many ways, the fall of the Roman Empire, right, which is around 400 AD, right, can really be traced back to the end of the Republic and the start of the Empire, which is 400 years beforehand, right? And so, like, I think to a degree of that, like, hope I got that right. If I didn't, write in. Thank you.
I'm sure that none of our listeners is super into Roman history.
Because I'm pretty sure it's... Anyways, where it's going with this is the fact of... And then, like, even before you can see the fall of the Republic, I think when you... No, they're the bat... Anyways, I digress. The point I'm trying to make before going over my classics training from now 2 decades ago... decade ago. Again, not relevant.
Did you just lose the timeline of yourself?
There are several parentheses in your discussion about
the timeline of the Roman Empire as used as an example for discussing the timeline of Star Wars?
Yes.
You don't have to answer that question.
Where I was going with this is again, I am hoping, I think it is a fair question. I'm hoping in the show that they are going to use some nuance to show that things are already on the decline, right? And that in a moment, to your Hemingway quote, right, you may not see the little details, but you take a step back and realize, oh man, this decision that, like, Master so-and-so made 1,000 years ago, like, set this all in motion.
Well, and I think part of the challenge with that is even like...
Like stealing kids. Maybe that was someone else's idea from 1,000 years ago. And, like, maybe that's just something they've been doing for the past 300 years.
One guy. Hey, no, what if we just took some kids?
Yeah. Well, it sounds like a good idea.
We used to get them donated when they were 15. How did we let this guy
onto the council? Jedi Master's kid Steelicus.
And maybe it was maybe it was Master Yoda's idea. Like, we're going to take the kids now.
Oh, he's been trying to live that one down for 800 years.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting because Despite the fact that the prequels show us the fall of the Jedi Order, it's not really like they're shown as almost being something that falls purely by external forces. It's not really until the other, like, I feel like we delve in Clone Wars and stuff that they get more into the nuance of, hey, there are some deep rooted problems here. In like
they,
in the prequels,
they should have seen
like,
some things coming.
We didn't see the Sith coming, and the Sith took us out. And it's like,
But like it could take out because your foundation was weak, right? So like I think George Lucas would have agreed with that. It's implicit,
but
like,
it's not explicit.
But this is the type two of going back to like Tony Sindelar's
theory of Star Wars.
Yeah, exactly, which is this is the Filoni fix it. Like that is a good example of like fixing it at the best of like it was there. And Filoni made it more evident.
And, you know, I guess it's hard to talk about this without getting into, like, how do you feel about the state of the world, the state of governments, the state of perhaps
the country
we live in. And, you know, I mean, I just have to say, like, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how the history books are going to write about humanity's battle with climate change. And, like, knock on wood that there are people around to write those history books. And that, you know, or because, I don't know. I say this as someone who works in higher education, which are organizations that have been around for a long time and
constantly stealing like, children.
Well, in a way, borrowing for 4 years, saddling them with debt. Saddling them with debt. And but I will say there is the very huge challenge in the world of higher education, as I unfortunately link this podcast into my day job. Most higher education institutions act like they have always been around and will always be around. And then when they fall apart, they're real surprised. And it's like, come on, guys.
Yeah.
You know, like the writing was on the wall.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah. No, I think it's
this. And there is, I mean, this is just Tony's cynical organizational theory. You know, whether it's the Jedi Order or some of your favorite countries, it sometimes feels like you have a lot of leaders out there who are just like, well, as long as it doesn't fall apart on my watch, I'm okay.
I am interested to see one thing that this show particularly has obviously dropped tantalizing bits about, but hasn't really gone into is the Sith. We have that one Sith Lord floating around there. We know nothing about them.
We're not sure he's Sith, or she is Sith, or they are Sith.
True.
You can draw some conclusions, but you can't.
And
but
Sith
it does
gets
raise the
thrown around as a title versus a people versus whatever.
Yeah, it does raise the question, at least of in you know prequel era, why they're not like 100 years ago. These Jedi folks ran into a Sith.
Well,
and they wrote some notes. Maybe they all die. Well, I don't know.
It's also
maybe this whole story basically gets covered up.
Yeah, well, that's interesting.
I do think about that too, right? And like, because if there's thousands of Jedi in training, like it seems like there are more Jedi perhaps than there are in the prequels. It's possible. Mm-hmm.
I think there are for sure.
So I think it's the degree of which the question, of like, well, why is that? Our planet's leaving the Republic, but I think that the question of it does raise. Totally lost my train of thought again. It's getting late. Sorry, no, it's fine.
I did enjoy the line that was like, "It's four Jedi. Who's going to miss them?" Essentially, it's like that's very different.
I think another witch is like, "No, we like you know
the Republic will come and be really pissed."
You kill four Jedi's, eight Jedi come to investigate that.
But it's like in the original trilogy area, it's like you kill four Jedi, you're done.
That's
all there is. All right, finally, one last piece from Stroopwaffle Falafel, which is a great username. Right about last week's episode at 19 minutes. You guys
were
looking.
People are tagging our references to time code now.
You guys were looking for a way to describe Yord's robes. Kat was looking for the word for when Mormons do their service
thing.
Thank you. As a missionary for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, Mormons is a nickname. I think I have your answer. We have proselytizing missionaries. They knock on doors. And we have service missionaries. They do volunteer work. So that's our clarification of...
Thank you.
Stroopwafel did not specify which robes they were for which duties. And for that, we forgive them.
Yeah.
No, it was great. And then I think someone in our Mastodon chat also...
Discord
chat pointed out, I'm really flubbing a lot of things tonight. Roman Empire timelines, Discord, versus Mastodon. No, in the Discord chat that I'd have to pull it up in front of me, but I think clarifying there
Temple
is,
Guardians.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. Yeah, the Guardian
there actually
was
a
combat
career path there.
All right, hold on. We need to thank that person because I saw that and I was like, that was some impressive work where they're like, I went and read the citation on Wikipedia and now I see where they misquoted this thing and how, like, you know.
Oh, that is Spall.
It went from being Spall. Oh, of course it's Spall.
It's Spall who I took a picture with at WWC this week. We have a picture together.
That's lovely. Did he break your computer?
Like the statistics for all? No, that was Dan. Spall has the statistics for all the podcast stuff, and is you know, just one of those super smart nerds. But like, yeah, basically, like, here is the place in the like Wikipedia citation chain where it went from being like lowercase G Guardian to uppercase G Guardian, and guess what? That has meaning.
Yeah, and so basically, if I can resolve it, basically, there's several different career paths. This is one of them, but it's not quite the same thing as like then like you could become a Guardian, but it's not the same. It was Dan showed me the picture of him and Spall.
Yeah. Yeah. So I appreciate that. I like the way we got the clarification and they got the citations to back it up. Love some good data crunching. So
nerds gonna nerd, love it.
I think that's all we got for this week.
Yeah,
so we'll wrap stuff up. We'll of course be back next week, but until then I would like to thank my co-host as always, Tony Siddler. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me,
Kat Benish. Always a pleasure.
Witches, super fun, happy to be here.
And thank you everybody out there for listening. Thank you especially to our supporting members via the Incomparable membership. Go to theincomparable.com/members to sign up. Get lots of extra great goodies, including bootleg episodes, extra content, and access to our members' Discord for a low, low price. We will be back next week to discuss episode 4 of The Acolyte, but until then, may the Force be with you.
So if this is a coven of witches, do you think there's like a coven of wizards on the other side, which then really like makes you think about the use of wizards as like a celebratory term in the Star Wars universe? Yeah.
The Incomparable Podcast Network. Become a member and support this show today. TheIncomparable.com/members.